In the late 1940s, radio's flickering green eye began to fade as yet another eye, the eye of the television set, began to flicker in living rooms all over America. And from that TV screen came some of the finest images of some of the most talented performers ever to brighten the world of entertainment. And from images this afternoon on Those Were the Days, we go to imaging. And I'm talking, of course, about one of the funniest and one of the most likable gals we've ever seen, Imogen Coca. Welcome to Those Were the Days.
Thank you.
You know, you're right in the midst of one of the most reminiscent shows in all of Chicagoland. But before we reminisce a bit, what brings you to town?
Well, King Donovan, my husband and I...
Who is sitting at your left.
Right.
Hello, King. Welcome to Those Were the Days, too.
Hello, Chuck.
We're appearing at the Wellman's Bridgeview Theater in Valparaiso, Indiana. And we open on the 22nd, and we run 3 weeks after the 22nd, in a marvelous show called Plaza Suite. And it's the first time we've done the play, and we're terribly excited about it. And it's a beautiful theater, and it has a marvelous restaurant, and it promises to be a nice engagement.
So anyone who wants to see Imogen Coca and King Donovan in the flesh, so to speak, head out to the Bridgeview Theater, right?
Right.
Valparaiso, Indiana. About 10 years ago, I saw the two of you in the Four poster.
Oh,
where did you see that?
Oh, right out here at the Tent House Theater near Highland Park, right?
Man remembers that day. That's marvelous. Thank you.
Yeah, that was a great, two-person show.
You know, I mean this very, very sincerely. The Plaza Suite is the nearest thing to Four Poster, not in content, but to my feeling about the play. I love Four Poster so much, and since then we've never done a play that I really felt or enjoyed doing as much as I think we're going to enjoy Plaza Suite. It's a different type of show entirely, but they both are so well written.
Yeah, very good shows.
They're beautifully written, and they have that peculiar quality that which we always look for when we're trying to find a play, particularly for the audience that we play for, which are the family or the family audience, I guess you would say, which is identification. You can come into the theater and you don't have to get oriented to who these people are. You know who these people are from the time the curtain goes up. It's very simple, very ordinarily identifiable. And this is a great thing, I think, that
and yet neither show is written in any... What am I trying to say? They're not mediocre shows. That sounds like, you know, everybody can...
These are quality shows.
No, they're beautifully... I was referring, first of all, to Four Poster by Jean de Hertog, and obviously this is not a poor writer, and a magnificently funny writer. And an interesting point about that show, because de Hertog, who, as you know, is the writer of The Cruel Sea and such, and great novels, had never written a comedy before, so far as I know. And one of the other shows that we did more recently, You Know I Can't Hear You When the Water's Running, was written by Bob Anderson, Robert Anderson, Pure Surprise. What was the first telling? First Bob Anderson.
Tea and Sympathy.
Tea and Sympathy. And he was a serious writer, had never written a comedy before either. And yet Water was a wonderfully funny show.
You enjoy performing
enjoy
in these...
I doing that as much, so.
around the country like this, getting to meet the bands and the people who remember you from... You know, we always talk about remembering and nostalgia. And everybody sounds like they're 1,000 years old. These things.
As a matter of fact, a week before last, King and I did a vignette on the Night Gallery, which is the Rod Serling
television show.
And we've been doing... I've done two series, and I can't tell you how many guest appearances, but it's funny. It always does sound as if you've never done television since Show of Shows, you know?
Well, let's talk a little bit about Show of Shows, if we can.
All right, I'd love to.
That started back on in 1949...
Right.
...as the Admiral Broadway Review.
That's
actually,
right.
It was an hour... from 49 to 50, I guess, one season.
It lasted one season, and then for some odd reason, Admiral didn't pick it up, though it was a big success. And I think we had a period, if I remember correctly, of approximately 6 months. And then they did a tremendously big show. They did a two-hour-and-a-half show, and I can't remember the official title of that. I think it was a Saturday Night Review. 1 hour, the first hour, came from Chicago with Jack Carter as the master of ceremonies, And then it would immediately go to New York, and our hour and a half came, obviously, from New York. Then the Chicago hour stopped being, and it became just the hour and a half from New York, and that was Show of Shows.
And that was live every week.
The whole 2 hours and a half were live. And the amazing thing about Show of Shows, I think, was that, well, we had no teleprompter, no cue cards, and we did not improvise on stage. Friday afternoon, we set the show. And in all that time, there were no accidents. The scenery was changed on time. The costume changes were made. We got, you know, off in time for the commercials. And that's something to say, I think, in an hour and a half show. And it was remarkable that in all that time there were no big tragedies.
That's what I was going to ask you. You answered four of my questions. I wanted to know if you did much ad-libbing on the air, and you said no. You set it up pretty much along the lines.
We would improvise and ad-lib and work with our writers. One of our writers was Neil Simons, who wrote Plaza Suite, which we're going to do. We would work with them and maybe bring in some of our own dialogue. It was a sort of communal effort, really, and all reflected what I think was the genius of our producer, Max Liebman. And, however, come Friday at noon, everything was set. And from then on, we did exactly what we had worked up to.
Now, you and Sid Caesar worked together on this whole thing, and I guess your association as a team with regards to the Show of Shows and the Broadway Review before, that was about 7 years, wasn't it?
I think so, approximately, yeah.
It was the Broadway Review, and the Show of Shows was on from 50 through 54. Maybe it was a little less than that, less than 7 years. But, of course, after Show of Shows went off the air, then you and Sid did another season.
Yeah, we came back and we did a season, and then we went to London and worked for BBC. And then Sid and Carl Reiner and Howie Morris and I did a special about 3 years ago, which won 10 Emmys, which was kind of nice. And then Sid and I, after we did the special, were on tour for almost a year. We played Vegas and the West Coast and the East Coast. So it hasn't been too long ago since I've worked with him.
I think he is touring this summer in the
Plaza.
Same show.
Yes, he's going to do it at Drury Lane.
Yeah.
Drury Lane.
Yeah.
And, you know, the marvelous thing about Plaza Suite, a lot of people are going to be doing it, and every time you see it, it's going to be a different show, because the show is so flexible. While you might hear the same words, they will be done and said differently, so that you'll be seeing a very individual performance in Plaza Suite. You know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, yes. Let me ask you if you came from a show business family.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, well, on my father's side, three generations of musicians. My mother was the first one in her family to go into the theater, but she was followed by all her sisters, who in turn married actors. Radio, I know you talk a lot about radio. My uncle, William Johnstone, married to one of my mother's sisters, was the shadow. He followed Orson Welles. And as a matter of fact, he is on one of the soap operas now. For the life of me, I can't think of it. He plays the judge in Is It As the World Turns?
As the World Turns. The World Turns.
He has white hair, a very distinguished-looking gentleman.
A great many of the radio actors, people who are involved in radio, are on the soaps today.
That's right. And not only in soaps, but into TV. I mean, Bea Ventadera, for instance, was fantastically active in radio when I first went out to the West Coast. And Bob Sweeney, who used to be with Sweeney and March, Hal March.
You know, kind of jumping back to television, Milton Berle was on before us. Jackie Gleason, if I'm not wrong, was on a little before us. He was on a network called DuPont and another network. Yeah. He's gone on two.
Jackie Gleason was the original Riley in The Life of Riley.
The Life of Riley. Yeah.
No, but then he did his own variety,
Things,
and
too.
Danny Thomas was doing his own variety show, and Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz was on. So we weren't kind of alone there.
Well, Broadway All Open House was on even before that, because that was where Art Carney first started.
Yeah. Well, Broadway Open House was the beginning of the late variety shows.
That's right.
Well, the spontaneous. But the point I was trying to make is ours was not the first variety show on television. A lot of people think it, but Milton had been on
a few years,
as had Jackie Gleason, as had, I think, Danny Thomas. And there was another, there was somebody else doing a variety show at that time. And as I say, Lucille Ball came on like about the year or 2 years after we started.
But your show, the show of shows, had a lot of prestige, and it was in a very fine showcase. Though it eventually became a great showcase for Imogene Coca and Sid Caesar, it was the combined efforts. A real review every week. You had the Rod Alexander and Bambi Lynn. And
we had Margin Gower Champion.
Margin Gower.
We had
Billy Williams.
Quartet. And Bill, you know something? I went to London not too long ago to do a few guest appearances for BBC, and Max Liebman let me look at some of the Kinneys from Show of Shows, and I thought, oh dear, they're going to be so dated, I don't want to look at them, and it was absolutely extraordinary. That material, that show could be done right now, and this is going to sound rather odd, the material is still ahead of itself. There is absolutely nothing dated.
That's great. It would be. Do you think if Max Liebman would release some of those kinescopes and they played them somewhere today, you think that you'd have a good audience for it again?
I think it would be a smash. Well, we did not do any of the Show of Show materials on the special that we all did, that I told you about.
Uh-huh.
But it was a sort of, a paraphrase, a parallel of the Show of Shows material. That did terribly well. So I think those shows would do marvelously.
Would you entertain a suggestion to team up with Sid again for a series?
Wait a minute. I'm sitting next to him.
I think they would be marvelous together. They did play together, as Imogene said, as recently as about 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
They were wonderful. Of course they'd be marvelous together again.
Well, King and I've been very lucky in as much as I have worked with two very, very talented people, Sid and King Donovan, and I enjoy working with both of them. King and I have done, we argue about this, either 17 or 18 plays together, and then we've done this, and then we go back to television. We don't always work together, but during our 10, he says it's 11, years of marriage, we have done 10 or 18 plays, and I love working with King, and I love working with Sid. That's a rough question.
No, the only difference was when working with Sid, she was doing review type of material on television, and Imogene and I have been doing legitimate plays on the stage. That's about the only difference. We never had, with the exception of the Rod Serling show, which we did recently, had the opportunity of working together on film. We had worked when I was directing, but not when we acted together.
Well, let's talk about King Donovan for a second. I remember you as Harvey Helm on the Bob Cummings show.
That was a nice period.
That lasted for quite a while.
Well, actually, Bob was on from 1954 to 1959. I left the show in 1958 because a very good friend of both Imogen's and mine, Brentane Windust, director, invited me to come back to New York. I had said, Wendy, if you can find a show, I want so much to do a play. And he said, in time. And finally, in 1958, he said, King, here's a script. Read it. If you want to do it, it's yours. And this was a show, The Girls in 509, by Howard Teichman, that caused me to tell Bob and Paul Henning that I really wanted to go back to Broadway. I had an opportunity, and I was going to be in a show with Imogene Coca and Peggy Wood. And I went back. The show was received not with great hurrahs, but well. We played for the better part of a year. We played 10 months with the show. So it was a fine show, as a matter of fact, and done afterwards in summer stock for many, many, many years. And this was where I met Imogene, and then we began working together, and we were married shortly after that. And we have been working together for the last at least 12 years.
Well, it's the...
No, working together for 12 years. 58 to 71.
This is the comedy team of the decade now.
Imogene
and King, right?
No.
King, no. I mentioned Harvey Helm, and that was Bob Collins, I guess Bob Cummings' name was.
Collins, yes.
You were the Air Force buddy.
That's right. That the old Air Force.
You were
buddy.
Kind of a were you kind of a stringer on the show?
No. Opposite of that. Bob was really playing the heavy. He was a swinger. In the original conception, there was to be a meeting of old Air Force buddies, and this wasn't too long after the war, and so there were three of us who came on. Three buddies, came out to California, where Bob was located, theoretically, to meet him and to have a reunion. Well, of course, Bob is lining up the chicks, he's making arrangements and all this sort of thing, and he's never forgotten the Air Force. He's never really quite grown up. He's still over there someplace when he was having a ball. Now he's back here having a ball. So we arrive, he's got everything set up for us, and we say, Bob, by the way, you haven't asked me. He's, what? What about the kids? What kids? My kids. Let me show you. And you bring out the wall, and you've got the three kids. Now, the other fellow says, you, three? I have four. Did you know that I have four? Now, the three buddies are talking about all of their children, all of their wives, and Bob has nothing to talk about. He's sitting there and says, I got a few chicks. I got a redhead. Oh, don't be silly, Bob. Now, you know what I miss? The great thing, do you have a lawn? I like that. And they're talking about the lawns and the kids and the kindergartens and all the things that's going on. And Bob is a total outsider to this. So, in reality, Bob was playing the heavy in the show, which was what was fun about it. He was really the misfit. It was beautifully conceived and cast by Paul Henning, and I think Bob was brilliant in the show.
So were you. So
thank
you.
From
there, before that, actually, you were with Burns and Allen.
Yes, George and Gracie. I was with them for 3 years before I went
Didn't
on.
Did you play her brother?
That's right, yes.
Roger.
Yes, that's right, Roger. Yeah. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Roger, the unwanted brother-in-law.
Weren't you on another...
Well, lately I did Ephraim at Imogen. Please Don't Eat the Daisies. Which one were we referring to?
I thought another
series. Well, I was with Ann Southern quite a while, but not in the same character. Just White and a couple other fellows were much more current with her. But no, the particular ones that I was with was George Burns, Gracie Allen, and Bob Cummings, and latterly, Please Don't Eat the Daisies. But you see, when Imogene, to go back to nostalgia, it's very interesting because I was on the West Coast and the coaxial cable had not come through at that time. And so we were not seeing the best of TV. We were only seeing what was being shown on the West Coast, and we would see New York shows a week late. Mm-hmm. And we were working in very small studios. Studios really about the size of this. We're now in a very small upstairs studio. But... we would go down. There was a show on the West Coast called Space Patrol. Now, if there's any Californians out there, they'll certainly remember Space Patrol. It was one of those shows that started in the afternoon, a kid show, with Captain Somebody and his buddy. And it was a futuristic type of thing, and kind of a Buck Rogers idea. And I began working at Pasadena Playhouse in a show called, Joan of Lorraine. And one of the members of the cast was working his television show. And it was very important that he had to have a certain amount of time to do his television show. I had never been inside of a television studio until during the run I got into the Playhouse. But they would go down and do the Space Patrol. And I finally found out how much money they were making. They were making $25 a week, doing five shows a week, 15 minutes every day. And they were being paid $5 a day. This was as late as 1949. That's how unorganized we were on the West Coast. When Show of Shows was at full swing.
But boy, did the West Coast take it over.
Well, very gradually. When it went into film. And as you both have said before, when Lucille Ball started, and then when George and Gracie, and then when December Bride came in, then it began to swing over to the West Coast. It went on to film. Things changed a little bit. They started using cameras, a two- and three-camera technique, which Lucy always used, and which we used in the Bob Cummings show. We did not have an audience, but we did have two cameras. So although we were shooting a half-hour show for film, we did a rather extraordinary thing insofar as we just shot the entire show in one day. And this was the way George and Gracie shot, in one day. They rehearsed one day, very loosely, and came back and did the show. Normally in those days, you would take 3 days to shoot a show, sometimes four, and possibly rehearse even one day. So it was a five-day arrangement. When Ozzie and Harriet started, and they were on for about 14 years, they shot 5 days a week. And for George and Gracie or Bob to be doing a show in one day seemed extraordinary to them. And yet it was good for the individual people, as with Imogene and Sid. They had become a family. They had become a unit, and it was right for them to do as they did. For George and Gracie, George liked everything loose. Bob liked everything very tight, so we would rehearse for 2 days. So that when we went on camera, we were very thoroughly rehearsed, and everything was tight.
Imogene, you did so much live television, and then I know recently and later you'd gotten involved in canned TV, so to speak, film and videotape and all of this.
Yeah.
There's quite a difference, isn't it?
Yeah, I find, frankly, I would rather do live television or film. I find I've done an awful lot of guest appearances, mm-hmm. and what drives me right up the wall with some of them is the fact that you start the tape, and then they stop it in order to make scenery changes or in order for the somebody to make a costume mm-hmm. change. And to me, as a performer, all the momentum stops, because by the time that 45 minutes has gone by, you think, now what was this show about? Mm-hmm. Now, I prefer, if I'm going to do that sort of thing, to be on film, where you shoot a small scene, and then you go and talk to some people around the studio, and you have a ball, and you come back and shoot another small scene. I am not particularly crazy about tape, but I think I'm alone in that. I would prefer, as I say, I would prefer to either do live television, and once that camera, that red little light goes mm-hmm. on, there you are, and you keep barreling ahead.
The one great thing about tape, though, hon, is one of the things that we experienced recently. We did a commercial, and the lovely thing is you do, let's say, a minute commercial, and it's taken in one shot with three cameras, that is, in one taping with three cameras, and then about 20 seconds later, the director has put up the lights in the place, and they give you a monitor, and you see your whole
well,
self
now,
back.
Well, darling, that is not true.
No, what I mean is you have the opportunity of seeing yourself.
No, but that is not true. Darling, that's not true of a variety.
Oh, no, I know that isn't true. What I meant was that all tape isn't bad, dear. Tape has advantages.
Oh, good heavens, a lot of people are crazy about tape. I'm just telling you
why. Well, we were crazy about that version of it.
Yes, but that is not what happens on a big variety show.
I know that, darling, I realize
that. When the tape stops, the performers don't sit and see what they've done.
What I meant was that the use to it.
How can you possibly compare it?
I mean, the tape has a value, and I think that if
to
a
whom?
Show to the performer, insofar as he can watch himself, he doesn't
but
have to wait until the next
day. But you don't on a variety show.
On a variety show, you don't. But there are people who are using it that way, darling. When Jerry Lewis has been directing pictures, he started that.
I did a Jerry Lewis show. I did a
Not
guest
a picture,
appearance
darling.
With him, darling.
Yes.
And we stopped the tape about 20 times, but we didn't see what had been shot.
No.
And neither did he.
That's possible, because he wasn't handling the show. But anyway, I think it does have some values, and that you can look back at it immediately, make self-criticisms, and improve yourself almost immediately, because you're into the whole situation.
When I see a taped variety show, it is obviously a taped show. They don't... they're not making any bones about it. They'll freeze the last frame, or they'll do certain things, quick, super quick changes, and you know it's done on tape. And as a viewer... I always feel that I'm being cheated a little bit out of the excitement of the moment.
Yeah.
And that's why I'll agree with you as far as the, Imogene, as far as the live television is concerned. Everything is happening right there. I think technically and as far as the quality of the show is concerned, you may get a better show on tape. And as far as the commercials are concerned, surely you have a chance to get immediate reaction to what you've done and see mm-hmm. where you might do it better.
Well, the quality of the tape, this is where, you see, we did, when before the coaxial cable went in, they had the right to play Show of Shows. Show of Shows had the right to be done 30 days after it was shot done live in New York City, mm-hmm. because they didn't have the coaxial cable. Then they had to be burned. All the tapes for union purposes. Well, there, NBC, obviously, I'm sure, has a library of the show, and so has Max Liebman, and so has Sid, and at one time, so did I have a library of the show. But otherwise, everything was burned because of the union mm-hmm. rules and everything. I had a reason for telling you that.
I remember what it was. When they went back, when you saw the shows that Max showed you, you were amazed.
The only thing better about tape, I think, is that the quality of the film is better than kinescope. That's what I tried to say.
We have to go, Johnny.
Thank you very much, Imogene Thorpe and King Donovan, for spending some time with us today on Those Were the Days. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure, Chuck.